Hello, and welcome to the Rembrandt Parables. I'm Tim Cooper. The parable of the Good Samaritan is such a familiar story that its impact can become lost. In today's parable, we see the power of a neighbor. Herbie, a friendly, displaced Newfoundlander, is always ready to lend a hand. But what happens when he needs to risk his life? Please join me today as I read The Legend of Herbie Hinks. Herbie didn't find himself tending the cash registers at work very often. But it wasn't that he wasn't good with customers. If anything, Herbie was too good with them. The regular customers that frequented his store were always left feeling like they were uniquely special, as though Herbie had waited all day just to serve them their coffee and bagel. In that regard, Herbie was a champion of customer service. What kept Butch from placing him on the till full-time was what could only be described as the dark side of his enthusiasm. Herbie loved to tell stories. Mostly they were folk tales from back home in Newfoundland. Being from the Rock meant Herbie was different from the rest of the staff at the Mortons. Newfoundland is not just an island in the Atlantic. It's a state of mind. Those who call it home understand. For those who don't, it's impossible to fully appreciate the Newfoundland perspective. What it's like to grow up bound together in isolated fishing villages, cut off from the rest of the world. Like so many, Herbie didn't come to appreciate his home until he was forced to leave it behind. The fourth of a family of six children, he was the first of his family to attend university. Memorial University in St. John's was a revelation. It not only opened his eyes to a bright new world, it gave him a new appreciation for the world he left behind. Herbie spent his childhood in Glovertown, a small fishing village on the north shore near the Cabot Strait. He grew up hearing the stories of the old Norwegian Terra Nova River mine and how it built the 120-foot-tall Sulphur Tower, of the legendary battles between the Beothuk tribes and the European settlers. He heard the story of the mysterious Great Fire of 46 that destroyed most of the original town. All his life, he took for granted the tales of his town, the legends that made his home unique. It was when he took a first-year course in folklore that his life's ambition grew into focus. The moment of epiphany came when he read Herbert Halpert and John Widdowson's Folk Tales of Newfoundland. It was the realization that the very ground beneath his feet held the secrets of his people, that history was as alive as the people who told their stories. Herbie pursued his newly discovered passion with missionary fervor. In pursuit of his degree, he traveled from the fishing haunts of George Street in St. John's to the tip of Stephenville, researching the folklore of the Rock. Herbie's passion for stories occasionally fueled an overactive imagination. During the late spring of his third year at Memorial University, Herbie sat on the front porch reading folk mysteries and legendary crimes from around the island. He overheard two men talking as they passed his house. "Number 35," said the first man. "That's the one. Be there by 8 sharp. It'll be dark and she'll be out. Make sure you park around the block and meet us around the back." "You planned everything," said the second voice. "This is going to be great. She won't even see it coming." Herbie held his breath, hoping they wouldn't hear him. Even the sound of his own heart seemed too loud. He waited until the two had left before sneaking back into the house. That evening, Herbie stationed himself by a window that gave him the best vantage point of the street below. The cordless phone was in his hand. He decided that as soon as he saw the two men approach the house, he'd call the police. To his amazement, he counted 7 people sneak into the house through the backyard. At 8:55, Herbie called the police. 2 patrol cars arrived several minutes later, with lights flashing and sirens blaring. Herbie watched their criminal plans being foiled. Another car arrived several minutes later as the criminals, in handcuffs, were lined up on the front lawn. 2 women got out and were met by police officers. "What are you doing?" shouted the older of the two women. She was beside herself in anger. "Do you live here?" asked the officer in charge. "Yes, my daughter and I," the older woman replied.
"Ma'am, we were given a tip about a breaking and entering at this address. We arrived to discover the ongoing crime."
"Crime?" yelled the exasperated mother. "It's a surprise birthday party!"
Herbie slowly sunk down below the window.
By his senior year, Herbie had already established himself as an expert in Newfoundland folklore. During his final semester, he even co-taught a course on the legends of the North Shore, based largely on his research. After graduation, he hoped to continue his studies, but like so many young Newfoundlanders, Herbie fell victim to an economy in decline. He packed up his life and joined the Great Migration to Ontario. It was Herbie's passion for folk tales that helped him adjust to a new life on the mainland. His expertise helped connect him to other Newfoundlanders living in Ontario. He even found himself teaching adjunctly at the University of Toronto, and in the summer, back at Memorial. Those outside his community knew nothing of his expertise. The other staff at the Morton's Coffee Pub only knew him as the friendly Newfie with the quirky accent. They took for granted that he could be anything more than an easygoing coffee jockey. That would all change on a cold, misty Thursday night in February. That was the night when Herbie stayed late to help cover the evening shift. He was often willing to stay late and help out when needed. It was part of his nature. On this particular evening, Herbie left the restaurant at 11:15. The clouds covered the city like a blanket, reflecting the lights, making everything bright. He made his way down Cannon Street toward Iverwin Stadium. He'd gone half a block when he noticed two men pushing a third man in a wheelchair about a block ahead of him. He only noticed them because he recognized the reflectors on the back of the chair. It belonged to Oscar Buller. Oscar was a regular at the restaurant. Over the years, Herbie and Oscar became good friends, going to Ticat games and attempting to visit every Morton's in Hamilton. Herbie picked up his pace a little to catch up to the group ahead. As he got closer, his suspicions increased. One of them was maneuvering the chair using the joystick. Oscar was slumped over. Herbie's mind began to race. He didn't own a cell phone to call for help. He decided instead to follow them. The three crossed the street at Sturton and followed alongside the power plant. Herbie stayed on the north side of Cannon, trying to look inconspicuous. He could now see Oscar's unconscious face. Herbie's heart was stuck in his throat. They all approached Birch Street at the same time. Oscar and the two young men turned south, away from Herbie. It's difficult to know what causes people to react in a crisis. Someone once said that courage was not the absence of fear, but the strength to act in the presence of fear. Herbie watched as the three moved into the shadows of Birch Street. If he was to do anything, it was now. "Oscar!" he yelled. "Hey, Oscar!" Herbie stepped into the street, not realizing the light had turned against him. A semi-truck blared its horn as it flew past. The draft brought by the truck sucked him further into the street. The horns of several cars honked at him as he recklessly ran to the other side. The ruckus made by the traffic caught the attention of the two young men, who stopped to stare at the lunatic crossing the street. "Oscar!" Herbie called out. He was out of breath, more from his near-death experience than from the physical exertion of the sprint. "What are you doing with Oscar?" he panted. One of the men approached him before he reached the chair. "He's my cousin. We're taking him home," he said, apparently annoyed by the delay. "His home's the other way," said Herbie.
"I meant my home."
Herbie tried to look at Oscar, but the man blocked his view. "What's wrong with him?" asked Herbie.
"He's sick. He needs to stay with me for a while until he's better," the man said as he smiled. He never took his eyes off Herbie.
"Oh, okay," said Herbie. He began to doubt himself. It might be a surprise birthday party all over again, he thought.
"Just let me say hi," Herbie said as he took a step toward Oscar. The young man blocked his way. For a brief second, Herbie could see Oscar in the light. There was a wound on his forehead. The other young man pushed the wheelchair down a dark path between the two streets. Herbie paused, then shook the doubt from his mind. "Hey, wait!" yelled Herbie. He lurched past the first man toward Oscar. This caught the first man by surprise, and he jumped onto Herbie's back. Instinctively, Herbie crouched to his knees, causing the man to flip over and roll into the street. Herbie ran down the path after Oscar. Behind him, Herbie heard the screeching of tires. Ahead of him, the second young man was leading Oscar down the dark path. Herbie leaped onto the back of the kidnapper. They stumbled forward a few steps. The assailant regained his balance and then tried to free himself from Herbie's grip. For what seemed like an eternity, Herbie was spun like a bull rider at a rodeo. The kidnapper whipped Herbie back around and drove him into the back of Oscar's wheelchair. A stabbing pain radiated through him as the handle of the chair cracked his ribs. Herbie's groan seemed to re-energize the young captor, and he started to toss him around violently. Herbie felt his grip slipping. "Lord, don't let him hurt Oscar," he prayed. Without warning, the kidnapper flipped Herbie over his left shoulder. Herbie landed flat on his back with a dull thud. The pain of his broken ribs shot down through the tips of his toes. Still, he managed to cling to the neck of the kidnapper. Their combined momentum drove the assailant head first toward the wheelchair. That was when Herbie saw the flash of light off the kidnapper's knife. As he fell forward, he took a swipe at Herbie. The kidnapper fell into the wheelchair. His head snapped back and landed face first on the ground, unconscious. Everything was still. Herbie wiped his face to check for blood and breathed a long sigh of relief. Pain shot through his ribcage. The sound of footsteps approached. "Hello?" came a tentative voice. "Should I call the police?" "Yes," Herbie said. "Help Oscar." He pointed to the wheelchair. The next thing Herbie remembered was waking up in the hospital. The nurse was doing something at an IV pole. She looked down and smiled. "Look who's awake," she said. "How are you feeling? Do you have much pain?" Herbie shook his head slowly. "No," he whispered. "Sounds like you had quite a night," she said. "Oscar?" Herbie asked. "He's all right. He told me to tell you thanks. You saved his life, you know. You're a hero." "I don't feel like one," said Herbie. The nurse smiled. "True heroes never do." Thank you for listening to The Legend of Herbie Hinks. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed producing it for you. Good day, and God bless.